David Jung, welcome inside the Crazy Ant Farm, man. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys,
man? Oh, dude, living the dream. Currently at two different locations living the dream, but you know, we're making it happen.
Yeah, it's fun stuff, man. Fun stuff. We're super excited to have you on the show today, though, because one, we're big fans of Doogie Kamaloha MD. That's where we first saw you, but now we're going back and looking at a whole bunch of things. And man, you are very versatile when it comes to all these different roles. So it's really fun to see this type of different action, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I've had a pretty weird career.
Yes.
My parents never forgave me for, so.
Well, and apparently neither did GMA. We're going to jump into that, too, because that stuck right out at me. Like, this man's got a lifetime ban from Good Morning America. How does that happen? We're going to find out. But what we first like to do is just kind of do a basic introduction for all of the listeners out there who might not be familiar with you. How did you get started in the industry, man? Did you know it was something you always wanted to do? Did you kind of fall into it? Was it a backup plan? Tell us all about it, man.
Well, I was your kind of classic Gen X Asian American kid with parents that were pretty expected of me going into a medical career.
Oh, yes.
Legal, medical, or MBA. MBA, JD, or MD, the Korean Holy Trinity.
That's right.
And, and I went to a boarding school. I went to a posh boarding school. I went to Phillips Exeter Academy in New Hampshire, and then I graduated from Cornell University. But I was pre-med English there. Mm. But when I was in high school, I saw a friend of mine in a play when I was probably 16.
Okay.
And I totally understood the conceit. Like I knew I wanted to be up there. And I thought that's the first sign of an actor's thinking, oh, I could do that better. Right.
That's
like the
classic. That's right. Yeah.
Points.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to kind of tip the boat for my parents, you know, cause they worked very hard to get me there. And you know, I understand what they were worried about. So I didn't do a play until my last year in college. In the fall, I just said, I got to try.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I auditioned for every theater company, got turned away, but then I ended up getting a role in the Asian American Theater Company. They were doing this play called Burn This, which has been done on Broadway so many times by whoever the it boy is.
Right.
during the time. And I went from never doing a play to doing a role that was like 70% of the play.
Oh, wow. And yeah.
It was a total panic attack, but it was exhilarating. And then from there, I knew that's what I had to do. Like I broke it to my parents that I was not going to apply to medical school. And then I was going to start auditioning for conservatory because I had so little experience. I knew I needed some kind of training. So
for sure,
I got the attention of the drama department, actually. Mm. I came out of nowhere for them. And they really helped me apply to conservatories, find and apply to conservatories. And I got into somewhere near your old digs, your current and old digs, soon to be old digs, at UNC Chapel Hill. I did my master's there.
Yes, so there you
I
go.
I had 3 years to learn about the primacy of the ACC.
Yes.
And the Tar Heel Country and Carolina Barbecue. And loved it.
Carolina Barbecue, man. You can't, I mean, it's good stuff. It's fantastic. Oh. When you first think about it, right, you're like slaw on top of what? Like, but man, it's so good. It's so good.
Now they know.
That's right.
I love that. Well, being a theater guy myself, I started off in high school. I started off in Beauty and the Beast. That was my first introduction. And then the next year, you know, Beauty and the Beast, it's so big and there's so many roles. So, you know, I was playing like a spoon and the prince before he turns into the beast and like all of these different things. But then my next year was Sound of Music and I played Rolf, which was just, that was my only thing. And, you know, I had to be 16 or she was 16 going on 17. And, you know, I had that 1 year age gap where I was so much wiser than her. So yeah, that was kind of a jump for me. So I definitely understand the going from nothing basically to being like this major key role. Like it's very interesting. And I mean, we talk about a lot on the show, mental health and anxiety and that different type of thing.
Yeah.
Did you experience any sort of anxiety going from nothing to something 75% of the show?
You know, it's funny. There was just a general sense of like terror.
Right.
You know, but I didn't know better.
Yeah.
And you know, like you just have that kind of courage of youth, the ignorance of youth. I was willing to do it. But oddly, as I got older, I dealt with those anxieties more and more. And I have a really funny story to tell you later on about this. I'll circle back to this later.
Fantastic.
When it's relevant. But that's a really important subject, is stage fright and anxiety, because I absolutely experienced that. On stage, in air guitar performances, and when I shoot, even now, when I'm shooting the show right now for Nickelodeon, even that, I deal with it all the time. So I'd love to talk about that and normalize it. By the way, just so I know, am I allowed to curse? I want to get.
Oh yeah, dude. Yes, the E is next to it. Fire away, my man. Fire away. Good. God, if we had to do a show without cursing, we wouldn't have lasted anywhere. We wouldn't have been a week, man.
My parents wouldn't know how to speak English.
No, yeah. Dude, so I love the story so far, though, man. And by the way, you are not our first Asian-American guest who has had that Holy Trinity and that same story. Like, oh, they wanted me to do this, and they were like, you're doing what? Like, so I love that, dude. I love that culture. I love how it's all just kind of rolling
in. Who did you get? Who's the other guest?
Oh, dude, we've had so many. Kyun Kim from Cocaine Bear and, like, just, I mean, same story. They're like, you're doing what? Like, oh, my gosh. So amazing. We've had so many. We'll have to go back and kind of clue you in. And let
as long
you
as you haven't had Randall Park, we're good.
No, we have not had Randall Park yet. Not yet.
I will remain.
Oh, yes. We've had James Chin. We've had, like, we've had so many, but yeah.
I love Randall. But Randall's the guy that we all know each other in the business, like Asian Americans. It's a really tight circle. We all know each other. And
yeah,
we do really celebrate each other's successes while at the same time wishing each other's death.
That's hilarious. So you started on stage, right? Doing the plays and everything. So was the plan always to transition into film and television? Or did you kind of see yourself staying on stage? I'm curious because you air guitar and the music, you know, and all of the kind of, was it always a stage thing? Or you're like, no, I got to bring this to film and television.
You know, it's really funny. I think at that age, that was in the 90s when movies were so exciting and wonderful. You know, we all got kind of pulled into that dream.
For sure.
And of course, I think I wanted to ultimately do that. But my first love was just performance. And the most accessible one was theater for me. And I loved it. And to this day, I love the connection with a live audience. And it really does connect with what I've learned is it connects with very deep anxieties that I had that drove me toward performance. Right. Like my first day in kindergarten, I grew up in upstate New York in Lake George, where in the 70s, there were no Asian people. I was like literally the first Asian person these kids had ever seen. My first day in kindergarten, all the kids looked at me and their eyes just went like this.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. A lot
of them started screaming and crying because they were scared by my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was day one. Wow. That was day one. And I don't remember a lot of stuff, but I do remember everything about that morning. And then I don't remember much afterwards for the last 46 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
But it set the table for being very aware of that reaction of people are aware of me.
And, right. Right.
And that time it was because of ethnic, you know, unfamiliarity and being different.
Yeah.
And I always had to worry about getting picked on or made fun of or beaten up. And I had two younger brothers in school, so I was always. I couldn't have enemies.
Right.
I had to go, I had to try and protect them all the time. So it made me a very, I think, political person in a lot of ways, because I'm always navigating.
For sure.
But also made me very performative in terms of, I was very aware of the impression I make. It turned out I was very comfortable doing it on a group setting as well. So when I went to Chapel Hill, that was my first opportunity to actually explore it. And I did 3 years of learning how to just do classical theater. So we did a lot of the classical canon and it was wonderful training ground for just learning how to perform. I didn't get a lot of opportunities to do stuff. You know, I was still kind of pigeonholed even then, which I still find quite disappointing. But when I graduated, oddly, and I was thinking I was going to be, I'd be a very dramatic, serious thespian. And what happened is I get to New York and I'm hustling. I'm working. I did a bunch of Law and Orders and Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Oh, yeah.
Of
course.
And I did some theater. I was just, you know, had a good promising career as a young actor. I realized quickly I'm going to be a character guy. Like, I'm not. If I was in this time at that age, I'd have a shot at doing leading stuff in drama.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But back then, there was so little opportunity. This is around 98 I graduated. So there was so little opportunity to play anything but doctors and forensic techs and all that stuff. And then a friend of mine who actually did a play down there with me at Chapel Hill, she was working on some comedy stuff and song parodies. and she's working the comedy clubs, doing at Caroline's and Gotham, and, you know, all the whole circuit. She asked me to help out with a song. And it was a parody of Ice Ice Baby.
Oh.
Called Rice Rice Baby.
Nice.
Oh, goodness.
Already and, in. I'm already in. Rice Rice
Baby. It was great. It was, and the show was, and you might have to bleep this up, but the show was called Chinkarama. So we're satirizing Asian stereotypes. Right? And this actually, this will explain a lot. So, you know, so we did a lot of song parodies. And this thing went. We, you know, we did the Just for Last Festival in Montreal. We did the
Asian. Yeah.
We went. In 6 months, we were in Montreal at the, probably one of the most significant comedy festivals. And I had never done comedy. Up to this point, I think I'm going to be a serious actor.
Right, right.
And here I am wearing Hello Kitty on my chest. Because one of my, my costumes is a red. I'm trying to find the most chinkiest outfit
sure.
that I could find, which is a red kimono. I look like a Benihana chef from hell. Right? Sanrio sponsorship. So I had a huge Hello Kitty breastplate.
Yeah.
And so I started doing comedy, and that opened the door for a whole new chapter because I didn't really get that training when I was at North Carolina.
Right.
And so what I did was I started really going into things like Second City. I started training with sketch and improv, and I did Second City. I did that entire training program. I looped it twice. I loved it so much. I couldn't get enough. I thought about moving to Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
When I came to LA, I did the Groundlings. You know, I went through it. And
for sure.
My dream all of a sudden became Saturday Night Live. I wanted to be on Saturday.
Nice.
And then on the way, what happened was for the comedy show, we heard about this weird little contest. Howard Stern started talking about this air guitar contest that was going to happen in New York. And we thought, oh, I did a little air guitar on the show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why don't I enter? We'll go bring a camera, shoot me in the costume, and I'll do the air guitar contest. The problem was because Howard talked about it, it became national news.
Of course.
There's been a contest in Finland, Oulu, Finland, for every September for 30 years.
Right.
But the U.S. had never had an official entrant, and this was in 2003. And so I entered this contest, and all the national press showed up. Like,
oh, my goodness.
I'm dressed in those racist outfits.
Yeah.
My character's name in the show is MC Chink Daddy, right? So I got CNN there. I'm thinking, I can't say I'm MC Chink Daddy. So I said, C. Diddy. That was the name.
C. Diddy.
That was the day that C. Diddy was born. That was my nom de guerre for air guitar.
I love
and
it.
Then, and then I won that contest.
Oh, yeah.
In New York. And then that was a whole other... I made all sorts of weird national news. I remember the next day, I was on Stern the next day, which was just bonkers. And he was great. Howard completely understood how air guitar, the joke of air guitar works.
Like, right.
It's not something, if you poke fun at yourself, if you're like very self-aware and feeling uncomfortable, silly, it doesn't work. You got to play deadly serious.
Yeah.
You really have to. But it hit national news. And I remember like it was like rotating on headline news at the airports because I was traveling. I was like, I cannot
believe. Oh, my goodness.
We were just about to invade Iraq. So it was a really crazy time.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm looking at the cover of MSNBC and I see like Tiger Woods won the U.S. Open and Dave Jung wins the air guitar contest. I'm like, this is bonkers.
The two right next to each other. Yeah.
Hell like, yeah. You
even,
hell yeah.
Yeah. That's so awesome, though, because I feel like, you know, we talk to a lot of people in the entertainment industry, whether that be in front of the camera, behind the camera, just getting started or been in it for years. So something that is very important that stuck out to me about your story is you're just not afraid to take chances, you know, to try something new, because we talk about that all the time, how if you feel like you know everything, that's when you start to get left behind. It is very important to keep expanding that box that sometimes you put yourself in, but to also step outside of that box often as well. It's so important because there's a lot of things that, like, you know, when you're picking roles, if you get to that status where, oh, they're just offering me roles and I can just pick and not audition. but basically, you know, all these different, you know, avenues you try to direct your career with, right? I mean, trying to figure out what's right, what's wrong. And so to just not be afraid of that and to not limit yourself to that, I feel like is very important, because the podcast, as I'm sure Dustin told you, is very, you know, for the up and comers trying to break into it. So to have no fear, to just have the ambition to just try things and to be a little raunchy sometimes, I think that's what we're starting to get there back with comedy, you know, where you're starting to get back to the raunchiness. But there for a while, for the past 5 years, I feel like a lot of people were scared to do things. So it's very refreshing to have you talk about that, to just be open about, you know, just have fun. You know, some people are going to like it. Some people are not. Totally. Just have fun. That's all it's all about.
Yeah, we couldn't do that show now.
No, exactly.
That's exactly right.
We saw that door close, and I left here around 2006. We could, the National Association of College, like they do the college events. That was
right.
We could tell they were starting to buckle down on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Like, for sure.
You know, our show brought a lot of discourse. We shed a strong light on it. Now, the need for it is different. Society's changed.
Right.
Yeah.
And those racist tropes are not really relevant. These kids don't even know anything like it. Mm-hmm. And their parents didn't necessarily sound like my parents did. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So I get it. I get that it's moved on. But I agree. Comedy is always hinged on the truth or the denial of truth.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
And the folly involved in that. So. It has been an interesting phase for comedy, for sure. But I don't object to it. I mean, it's different. We all have to try different things. But I do see with my kids, for example, they're pushing back on this. Like, they're very reverent. For them, racism is completely aberrant. It's not the norm at all.
Right.
So they refer to it. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Right. And they use it with total irony, and which is great.
Yeah, yeah.
When I grew up, that was not the case.
No.
You know, they kind of meant it, you know, and it's, and that's why I love the air guitar thing, because it was one of those things where, like, I grew up in upstate New York, and I just absorbed the metal around me, even though I listened to pop radio, and I was the straightest kid, I had a bowl cut, and I was in love with Jesus, and I was really nice. and I go to boarding school to learn how to be a dick. And shoot
yeah,
a back
yeah.
But I love metal, and what I love about the air guitar contest is I got to totally upend that stereotype. Like, I'm literally listening to Priest or Van Halen, or and my song I picked was by Extreme, by this fabulous guitar player named Nuno Bettencourt, and I just get to rock out. Like, I love that music. I love electric guitar.
For
sure. I don't play, just so you know, I don't play it. I've won so many air guitar contests. And the prize you get for winning these things, ironically, is a guitar.
And you're like, I don't play.
I don't play. Leg,
yeah,
I love it. I got the co-op medal, you know, in that outfit.
Oh yeah, hell yeah! Right. So I have to ask, because I want to bring it kind of back to the anxiety issue and everything, because Logan brought up a great point. To be fearless and take chances in your career and say, hey, I'm gonna do this or I'm gonna do that, because we talk about all the time about how this industry for sure is not linear. It's not like I'm gonna do this and I just stay on that line and I go, right? It's you're gonna go here, you're gonna go there, kind of a thing. So how does somebody that suffers from anxiety the way that you do, how does someone with anxiety at that nature be fearless? Like, you're like, that doesn't even make sense to me. So how do you overcome it? Or I know you say you still suffer from it. So how do you make that decision to take the chances and go outside of the comfort zone knowing that you're going to be anxious about it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I branched off into all this stuff out of necessity, because there was no opportunities for me to work. And
right.
I wasn't thinking I was going to be a comedian. I never showed signs of it before. But I was open. I just wanted to play.
Right.
And I think what you realize when you enter the entertainment business, you have this idea that you're going to make it. Like, you're going to start working on television, you're going to be a star, you're going to have an agent and all this. And then when you actually get there to New York or LA, the landscape is far bigger than you realize.
And
what you don't know is so vast. It's very easy to get lost in this. But the one upside is that you kind of say, fuck it, and just do anything. You go. And that's what you should do. The most important thing is just go.
Yeah.
Try everything.
Yep.
And my career, I think what I'm most proud of is that I learned voiceover. I did commercial work. I did all roles of television, from the one-liner to extra work on commercials and productions. I've literally walked all the way. And, you know, I've done feature films. I did a series regular role. I've done guest stars, comedy, drama. You know what I mean? I've done theater. Like, I just, in a lot of sketch, improv, everything.
Yeah.
Just, and it, just be open and curious and engaged, and don't think that you're wasting your time. I think a lot of actors that, especially with the social media, they're really preoccupied with getting followers and establishing a certain idea. You know, the one of the best things for me, oddly, to be an actor and to be an artist was the fact that I wasn't a theater major, that I wasn't a theater geek in high school. I had such a broad base of education that I went into it humble because I didn't know anything, so I was open, and I was willing to take the smallest roles because I knew what my situation was as far as race and just experience. And it allowed me to gradually get more comfortable. But what happened is as I got more comfortable, as I advanced in my career and started to do bigger things, I started to become a little bit more self-conscious. And all of a sudden I'd start looking down a little bit and realize I'm a little higher up than I was before.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And anxieties, you know, because my performative nature and skill was derived from a moment of terrible anxiety when I was a kid, I found that, like, for example, I got a little bit famous with the air guitar stuff.
For sure.
Myself with Tiger Woods, and I have a press kit the size of the King James Bible from just a couple of weeks of white hot fame. And then the documentary came out as well. And I started getting recognized. And I went into that thinking, I want to be famous. I want to really be successful and famous. And I started getting recognized in New York. I tend to get recognized at 3 a.m. by drunk people, by the way.
Sure.
But I would get recognized, picked up, and it was very disorienting for me. I didn't expect that reaction that I'd have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, I've got to be ready to have that conversation at any given time.
At any point,
And I thought, oh, I'm going to love it. People are like, oh, and you know, when I do get recognized, it's very sweet. Everyone, like, they really get a sense that they know me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in that documentary, they do see a lot of me. So I'm very relatable and accessible. And so people are so friendly. But even with that, I was very triggered by it. And when I remember... I would do like performances because I'm not like the godfather of the air guitar scene, right? So I would do like a halftime show. And I remember we were at like the Troubadour somewhere, and I was going to do the halftime show. And I was thinking, I'd won like a ton. So there's a lot of expectation, like CDD's going to be here and all this. And I was up there on the top of the steps, panicking, thinking, I'm going to disappoint everyone. Like, I'm a world champion. They think I'm like one of the greatest things I've ever seen in air guitar. Like, this is ridiculous what I'm doing. Like, they're gonna be so disappointed, and I can't do this. And like, I'm really. And then I think, why am I so nervous? Like, what's going on? Like, and then I realize, oh, I'm the sexiest motherfucker. It's the character. I said I forgot to put the character on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the sexiest motherfucker alive. That's it. Then I went in. I was like, yeah. Then I found the key is to not make it about me.
Yes,
and that was the first rule that has saved me, and I'm sorry. The second rule that saved me, that's the first rule that saved me, and the second one I learned a little bit later is remember to breathe.
helps.
One of the biggest causes of anxiety is hypoxia. Like, if you're not, and when you're stressed, you stop breathing. You tighten up a little bit, just a little bit of breath, and that triggers more anxiety, which makes you stop breathing even more or breathe more shallow. And then all of a sudden, you've got a lot of anxiety. And I generally handle anxiety well. Like, I use it to fuel my creativity and my behavior.
For sure.
It gives me a lot of energy. I do a lot of big, broad comedy, so it helps. But too much is very paralyzing.
Mm.
So I learned, first of all, to really find a way to let go of myself, not make it about myself, which is the part that makes me look down. And thinking about, I'm going to fail, I'm going to forget my line, or I'm going to screw up, or I'm going to make a mistake. I'm going to disappoint everyone. I'm going to get fired. I'm going to get hired again. You know, all this stuff. And then also breathing through that. When I have that moment, I remind myself, just breathe.
Yeah.
Breathe and just be present and look at the other actor. Look at whatever else. Get outside of yourself. Do whatever you can to just forget about yourself. And even if just picking up something to read or just something to focus on and breathe, that's what started to anchor me. And then... that allowed me to stay present. And then at the end of the day, when I would fuck up, I realized it's okay.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's not the worst. Like, I'm not the most important thing on the set.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have
made a lot of friends who are writers now. They love telling me what drives them most about actors is when they make it about themselves. And they want to, like, just, they're about to roll camera and the writers have been dealing with, like, you know, the camera operator, like, you know, like being high and like an asshole. And then they lost an hour on the location. There's another disaster here. Someone's got COVID and all this crazy shit. And they finally get to the set and they want to roll camera. The actor's like, you know what? I want to talk a little bit more about my backstory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fine to do that, but it's now you're making it about you because you're panicking most likely. And they can sense it. They're like, are you fucking kidding me? And they do panic. They melt down. What they appreciate most is get in there. Don't make it about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do your job. Trust that you can make a mistake and fail. They'll just do another take.
Yeah.
And breathe. Just be present. Be professional. And you'll be okay. And you learn that the hard way as an actor. Like, you're so precious. I remember when I get the one-liner, like, you're so precious about it. That wasn't going
right.
to fuck up a one-liner. But, you know, some actors that do, I'm sure you've interviewed them when they got the one line.
Oh, yeah.
They're like,
terrified.
Yeah.
The camera becomes a gun, right? They're just like, yeah, they can't even say their name.
Right.
I remember I was thinking, oh, I'm going to just rock this. I got this one line that will come out. And this is for Ed Sheeran, one of my first jobs on Law and Order. I was an ER doctor. I was coming out of there, and I was gonna just like it was gonna be my ER moment. I was gonna be like, we gotta get the paddles and just charge it up. And I get out there, they go action. I'm just like, and it's like, Ed pulls me aside. God bless his heart, give me the biggest lesson. He goes, let me tell you something, kid. You're gonna be really good in this industry. Don't act. You don't need to act.
That's right.
And at first, I thought, oh shit. I really suck. I'm going to get fired. But what he told me was the camera does so much work. The best thing you can do is be present.
Yeah.
Don't make it about yourself. Let us do 90% of the work.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that scene, a lot of that stuff that I did wasn't even in the final cut. So that's the lesson you learn afterwards. That all that you care about, 90% of what they shoot doesn't even come close to making it anyway.
Right.
Right. Right.
You know,
it's so interesting. Yeah, because for me, for my anxious brain, like I always start to try to get inside of other people's brain. Like, what are they thinking about? What are they thinking about me? And like all of these different things. So, yeah, it becomes like this whirlwind of clusterfuckness. And you're just like, how do I make this stop? But yes, breathing is so damn important.
Oh,
because we forget. Yeah, we do. How, like, you know, we gotta just slow this down. Something that I feel like would have given me crazy anxiety, and correct me if I'm wrong, but on the set of Doogie Kamaloha MD, you were like really way up high on like this freaking like a catapult, like freaking lifeguard stand or something that. I would have been like terrified of that. I'm a little terrified of heights. So when I saw that and like that whole sequence with you, I was like, bro, how did he do this? Like, so that experience, what was that like? And then the whole set as a whole, what was that experience like?
Oh my God. First of all, I am terribly afraid of heights.
Oh God.
I'm terribly afraid of heights. Like, it's no joke.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, this character, sorry, my daughter is making me approve her screen time, and I want to not yell at her.
Right. We're approved.
Doesn't matter.
We're approved.
World champion, famous actor, getting it done. He's like, hold on, I got to approve my daughter.
I know who I work for. Trust me.
That's right.
I was really excited. I actually read for the father for this show.
Oh, okay.
Father. And here's the funny thing. Actually, I should preface this. When I did the air guitar, there's a documentary called Air Guitar Nation.
Right.
Yes.
It's on Freevee now, but it documented the whole air guitar thing. And for me, it was just an exploration of like the improv and physical comedy and stuff mm-hmm. that I love to do. It was like my Spinal Tap. Is what I felt it was.
Hell yeah.
Even though it's a documentary, obviously we're playing a lot in there. But I had no expectations. One of those things where I was just open. I didn't have any expectations. I just had fun and I had a life. And that's the thing I always remind people. You have to have a life. You have to live
for
your
sure.
life.
Yes.
Because otherwise you won't have any logs in your fire as you get through it. So we have this documentary. It was my exploration, but I didn't think anything would come of it. I didn't attach anything to it. My parents were actually hoping it wouldn't affect my career, to be honest. But it's really funny, but in the last 5 years, that documentary, which was released in 2007, based on a contest that I won in 2003,
right,
has become so relevant. And they saw the producers. I read for Doogie, for the father, but Jake Kasdan, who's one of the producers, is Larry Lawrence Kasdan's son, and Jake Kasdan is an amazing director as well. And Melvin Marr, the producer, who's Asian American as well, was wonderful. They had seen Air Guitar Nation and they loved it.
Nice.
They loved it. And so that was a wonderful introduction. And so it's one of those examples where just doing something that you love or you think is fun mm-hmm. or whatever, you it paid off 20 years later.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
You know what I mean? And it was just free. There's no strings attached to it. I just wanted to have fun with it.
You know,
and so I read for the father. Oh, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's just one of those classic examples like you were talking about earlier, that there's really no insignificant role, whether it's a walk-on or a one-liner or you're just in the background or whatever. It's all about you don't know who sees you. You don't know who's watching that and goes, holy shit, that guy yeah. that walked in the background and had that look on his face, that's the guy we're looking for. You don't do that. You never get seen, right? So I love that. This whole interview, you've been kind of putting that out there. It's like, just do it. Just get on a set. Yeah. Go do this. Try this. Try that. Because inevitably, somebody's going to see you. That's how you get seen. I love that. Just the whole thing. Okay, now
and
back to
Dude. Actually, here's the point. After I'd done a bunch of guest stars and tested, I got a call from, you know that show?
Okay.
I was basically an extra on that show. And my agents, and I get paid nothing. My agents, like, you know, my agents are great. She totally understood why I wanted to do it. I like the show and I love this, what Nathan does. I wanted to see how he did it.
Right.
So I just took this role and I fell asleep during the shooting. It was so like boring for anyone. I was like, oh shit. I hope they didn't shoot me shooting it, sleeping.
That's right.
But actually, I kind of hope they did. But I learned a lot just watching it. You know, but then all my friends saw me. You only see me just for a second.
Oh, yeah.
It's clear, like, I'm just background. All my friends were like, what were you doing? Like, why are you doing that? They thought it was ridiculous. They couldn't believe I did it. But it's exactly what you're saying, Dustin. It's like, there's no role that's too small. Like, I love, what you learn is commercial extra gigs, when you're starting out, your listeners don't ever say no to an extra job on a commercial. It's the best job.
Yeah.
It's the easiest gig and it pays great. And you get to hang out with actors and eat Twizzlers all day. It's the best. The best. You know what I mean?
I love that.
It's so funny. But yeah. What I first saw you in, because obviously we can tell I'm a youngin. So yeah, with being introduced to you and Doogie and then going back and then looking at your IMDb profile, I'm like, it looks so different from what you were like on actual set. So every time that you popped up on screen, you brought that energy, you brought that light, kind of like you're doing right now in the interview. So it's very refreshing when, you know, we talk about all the time in the streaming wars with all of this content that's coming out there. Mm. A lot of it is dramatic, right? A lot of it is very hardcore, very sometimes social justice, sometimes, you know, a lot of death. So to have this type of show with specifically your type of character to bring that light, and every time you come on screen, it's just like, that dude's funny as shit. Like, so it was really nice to see. And I just wanted to give you the flowers, the credit of, you know, being one of the lights of that show. And it is something very important to see. We had, Westian on the show as well. And like the same with him. He was such a funny, lighthearted relief of the show. So it was really amazing to see. So yeah, I just want to applaud you for a second and to say thank you for the lightheartedness.
I appreciate that. You know, it's a lot of actors, you know, because I didn't get the father, I went to Jason Scott Lee.
For right. sure.
Is who I adore. I loved him in Dragon. He's just
so good. So
he's
good.
A really nice, lovely guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's actually Hawaiian. So thank
nice.
God.
Right.
Right. Hawaii's on the show.
That's right.
But you know, when they offered me the guest star, you know, a lot of people would have been like, I'm not going to take the guest star role because I should have been the father. I should be a serious regular. It's beneath me.
Right.
And first of all, I wouldn't do it, but as a professional, I would do it. An opportunity works work. But we only have a handful of Asian American cast shows this. And I thought, I meant it. I'm going to get behind it. In any way I can to push. Like, I want this to succeed because it helps all of us. In fact, I auditioned for student films, like AFI, American Film Institute.
Yeah,
for sure.
Asian audition for student films. If there's an Asian writer or director, I'll do it. I just did one last Saturday for a friend. A kid,
that's awesome.
He's about to start film school. He said, would you mind coming to my dad's office? And he didn't know anything about what he's doing. Like, yeah. No, didn't do light, didn't do sound. Shot on a phone with a Gimli or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
But I'll do that. And so I did that with Doogie because I wanted to succeed. And what you realize is not about me. It's about, and it's not even about my ethnicity. At the end of the day, it's about our humanity, right? What we do is we tell stories that reflect all of our experiences in some way, you know? So I was so happy to be a part of it. And I did have I had my own energy to it. Like I could have played the father. They wouldn't have tested me if I couldn't have done it. Did they? Mm-hmm. I would have chose Jason though. They made the right choice for the role of Riptide, which is the guy I played.
Right.
I have another gear I can do that Jason may not be able to do. So I was happy to do it. When they put me 20 feet in the air in a crane.
Yes.
I think they removed the stream of urine that fell from my hatch. I'll tell you the story about this. Now, I did panic. Like, you know about Riptide?
Yeah.
There's a local weather guy in the show, and he's like, you know, I got a mullet. It's like, you know, what's that show? What's that guy? I can't remember, forget his name. He's on a Chuck Norris show. Walker.
Yeah.
With a mullet. I was like, and he's Hawaiian, actually, but I was like at his mullet. I look like Guy Fieri with
with the shirt.
That's right.
Yeah, it was awesome. But the guy is like super high energy, and he's like, mm-hmm. these models. And I got the script, and it's like full pages of like weather reporting, local news reporting.
Right.
And I knew that I'd have to fly through that shit. Like,
oh yeah,
because you know TV, you know, it moves so quick. You know, the lines are fast. I saw when do you see a 1.5 page monologue in. In a comedy,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, holy shit. So they put me on that crane, and unfortunately they saved that shot for the end of day.
Oh my goodness.
Like, and it was the worst rainy season in Hawaii. I'd been in Hawaii for 2 weeks. Now, woe is me, I'd be stuck in a fucking
exactly.
But the problem was I was panicking. Like, I was like, oh my God, do this. I'm all nervous thinking, how am I literally drive around the island and just go over the mile, like, over and over. Like, I must have gone this hundreds of times. So I had it cold. I get up there. It's the last shot of the day. I'm like, fuck. The sun's about to set. We're about to lose light. And on the other side, it's monsoon season. I can see a fucking rain cloud coming.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, oh, shit. So, like, I've got maybe two takes, three if I'm fucking lucky.
Right.
And if I don't get this, they got to get the location back, the stunt team, the crane, all the equipment. It's going to cost $100,000. Like, fuck. And what you learn about being a guest star, right, because the pressure goes up a little bit, is your job is to be a good guest and a proper guest.
That's right.
You're not there to get attention. You know, you're there to make the machine move on time, if not faster.
That's right.
You're a guest. Keep your shoes on. Get the fuck out quickly.
That's right.
Right? So I'm up there. I'm thinking, I got it. And so this is where I'm like, I have to be perfect, right? That button has been clicked big time. And now I've got two issues with the light and the fucking weather. And I'm like, I really got to be perfect. Fuck. And I'm having an anxiety attack because I'm 20 feet in the air on a crane being held like with a wedgie, essentially. I'm like, fuck. So I get through it once, and it's okay. It's like I get through it. It was a little clunky. But what I learned is when you have to get to material, you try and mark. Give yourself the first couple takes to not be perfect, a little slower. Right. And if you, especially if you got blocking and walking around and handling props, you got to set your markers down as you go through the dialogue.
Right.
Mm.
And it takes time. You got to first pass, you got to set it. So at a certain point in this line, I'm going to pick up this bottle. And then at a certain point, I'm going to open. Then I'm going to drink it. Then I'm going to put it down. Then I'm going to do this. You mark the movements and what you're doing based on the speech. But it takes a couple runs to get there.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And what a lot of young actors do is they think they got to do it right off the bat. And there's a lot of pressure and you can't. So right. I was able to mark the moments. I marked who in the extras, because there's a bunch of background actors on the bottom that I'm talking to from above. I picked a couple of them. I spoke with each one and always made that movement so I could mark exact. And I was really speaking to them individually. So I made it specific for myself.
Mm, that's, right.
And you do that not because you're trying to be this deep artist and, you know, with integrity. You do it because it's really practical. To know where the fuck you're saying something and when you should get there and where you should be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I got through that and I got faster and faster. And then, but after the second take, towards the end of the second take, I had gone through it so fast that I had I had hyperventilated.
Oh my goodness.
And so when we're rolling to the third take, they're like, okay, roll camera. And I was like, who am I? I was like, what's my actual name? Like, I couldn't remember the first word. I couldn't remember anything. So I was like, wait. And I could tell the moment I did that, all the producers and the director were like, look at me like, he's melting down. Because they have a radar for that. They have a radar when they know when someone's like literally imploding inside.
For sure.
And I just said, no, I just need a second to breathe. Because
that's right. You know,
and I just breathed for a little bit, slowed down, started the take again, fucked up, said, it's okay, just keep breathing. And then I caught my breath. And it all came, the lights just came right back on. I ripped through it. That third take, I nailed. Did all that work. And then I got the mistake out of my system.
Right.
I relaxed, had a little bit of an adrenaline kick. And then blazed through it. And then sun went down. Rain started to come. The director's like running out screaming because so happy that she got the shots.
Amazing.
Crazy. But I'm so glad I got to do that because I don't, like, other people could have done it, but I felt like I could bring something really different to it. That I know a lot of these guys that my friends, they'd bring something different, but I was so happy to bring what I had to it. And I had ownership to it. And because I felt like I had ownership, I didn't have to question whether I belong there.
Right.
And whether I could make a mistake or whether I could take my time. There's a way to take your space there without being a diva or a dick. Mm. You know what I mean?
That's right.
You can still be humble. And the way to do it is to realize you're part of something that involves hundreds of people around you. You are no more or less important than anyone in there, you know?
Yeah.
And that takes the pressure off of you. Right?
It does. Yeah. It really does. Being able to balance everything. That's so important. But man, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show and getting crazy with us because this has just been such a freaking fun ride. I mean, more than welcome to come back and talk about more stuff because, like I said, we have so much in common and so much more we could talk about. We do a top five segment every week on our show where we, you know, last week it was top five actors and actresses who we wanted to see more of but passed away or retired before they could. So all these different things, man, I want to put that out there again. Just thank you so much for coming on the show. And it is about social media. So where can people follow you? Because, you know, we got to do it.
Oh, yeah. I'm at, oh, crap. Instagram at Dave S. Jung at DaveSJung.
Yeah. Okay. All
right. Fantastic.
Yeah. And then
fantastic.
Also I'm on the show. I got to promote it. I'm on this new Nickelodeon show called Aaron and Aaron.
Of course.
Yes.
It just finished airing, but it'll be, I think it's going to be in Netflix later in the fall, but I think it'll be rerun on Nickelodeon. I play Chuck Park, the dad.
Fantastic.
My first series regular gig, and for the first month, I couldn't stop urinating. I was so nervous.
See, yeah, that's the thing, right? You got the dad role. You got the dad role, series regular.
I got it. It's the right dad role.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, now you got to wrap this up really quick, but I have to know because this whole interview, I'm thinking to myself, this has got to be one of the most genuine, nicest guys that we've ever talked to. He seems so sincere. He puts the daughter first. He's got this whole thing. How the fuck did you get banned from GMA, bro? What happened?
It was the air guitar. We were promoting the air guitar contest.
Okay.
And, I was on Good Morning America, and we did a performance in Central Park Live with I think Al, one of the weather people, and I gave my hair metal all in this. And apparently Diane Sawyer, this is what I'd heard, found that my tongue was not appropriate for Good Morning America. And that no air guitarist shall ever be allowed on Good Morning America.
Enough said. Enough said.
It's gone.
Yeah. It's like back. Not just you, but any air guitar. Like,
yeah, I ruined it for everyone.
That's right. But somewhere Gene Simmons is celebrating going, that's my man. Like right there. It's all about the tongue. Fantastic, man. Fantastic. Well, listen, dude, like Logan said, open invite anytime, man. This was a blast, and just enjoy the rest of the weekend, and just, dude, awesome.
Thank you. You too, guys. Good luck with your move.
Yeah, thanks,
man.
Thank
you, man. Oh, right. Talk about somebody who brought the energy, man.
Oh, my God, dude. He was, like, full of life, just like, you know, I love guests like that who are so enthusiastic and everything. I also love guests like that. That convey to everybody out there trying to get into this industry that it's all about being humble. Know that you belong there, but don't forget to be humble while you're doing it and that there is no insignificant role. I love people like that, man. That's how you get it done.
Yes, for sure. And I mean, I feel like, you know, there's so many sound clips we're going to take from this interview. Like,
it's unreal.
Freaking hilarious. I'm so thankful. And man, oh man, thank you again, David S. Jung, for coming on the show.